Well, dude, we were supposed to have a special guest on this episode, but the guy canceled at the last second. And I tell you, I feel it's sort of like a slight sense of betrayal there.
You know, speaking of betrayal, you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have Stephen Brumwell, author of Turncoat by Benedict Arnold.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the betrayal goes that deep, but he ain't showing up. Let's just say that.
I think it had something to do with me talking about Taiwan last week.
I think it had everything to do with that.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Maybe
when
you need to watch what you're saying. You can't speak against the you-know-who.
This is what happens when you depend on someone from Red China.
That's the you-know-who I'm talking about.
It's America.
Well, if you wake up dead in your bed sometime this week, don't blame me. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get started with the show. You ready?
Yeah, but I think there's plenty of people in line ahead of you, so I'm
not ahead of me. Ahead of China.
China.
China. Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Sons of History podcast. I'm Dustin Bass.
And I'm Alan Joaquin.
Yes, he is. And he looks phenomenal with the upturned collar?
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah. Turncoat? A little
turncoat? No.
No? It's not a okay. Turncoat,
yes. It's a little upturned. Cold. It's a little cold out there. So
it is chilly, man. You know. The wind came in very strong. Uh-huh. So, so we did a bit of a scramble this week because we had a guest cancel, which never happens. Never happens.
It hasn't.
People want to talk to us.
We cancel, we cancel on them. They shouldn't cancel on
exactly.
us.
Exactly. We do the canceling. That's right. We're the cancel culturalists.
We are the sons of history.
That's right.
It was
and we will make you history.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So.
All right. So we had to scramble a little bit. We do have Stephen Brumwell coming on in 2 weeks to talk about Benedict Arnold. So we figured, or you figured more or less, it's like, hey, what do you want to talk about? And you want to talk about Saratoga?
You know, one of his greatest victories was the Saratoga campaign. Mm-hmm. And I figured, you know, if we're going to have a discussion on Benedict Arnold, let's talk about some of his exploits, what he did. Now, this subject or this episode is not going to be all about him, but it's going to be quite a bit and shows the kind of impact that he had.
And it'll be a good lead up to the conversation that we're going to have.
Yeah.
And although it happened starting in like June, and we're in February, so it's nowhere near when we are right now. Therefore, it's not going to be used in This Week in History. All right, so Alan, you go ahead and start up because I started off our week one. Week two, go ahead. What's your This Week in History?
This Week in History, February 19, 1945, the Battle of Iwo Jima. This is a little island, 8 square miles. That's it. You know, it was halfway between Tokyo and the Mariana Islands because we started the bombing campaigns after we captured the Mariana Islands. And so the 3rd, 4th, and 5th Marine Divisions landed on the island. And there was some Army units also, but those were the three big units that really did the attack. And they thought it would be more of a mop-up operation, a lot of bombings and shelling of the island, but it ended up being 5 weeks long. There were about 21,000 Japanese soldiers on there. All but about 216 died. 216 surrendered. That's it. So about, 21,000 Japanese soldiers died. Now on our side...
What's the ratio there?
That's quite a bit. I can't even, like, what, one in a thousand? I don't even know. I have to sit and write it down.
Uh-huh.
But we lost, like, almost 7,000 men killed, about 25,000 casualties overall. That was for 8 square miles of land. You know, now the raising of the flag by Joe, the picture taken by Joe Rosenthal of 6 of the Marines. Mm-hmm. You know, that was actually the second flag raising. There were two of them.
Right.
There was a small one. That's one that got all the hurrahs and the honks of the... You know, the horns from the ships and the cheers from the Marines. But it was
and
a really small flag.
The honking of the Canadian convoy.
Yes, I know. No, can't have any of that. So, yeah, it was a smaller flag, but then they wanted a much bigger flag. So they sent up 6 other guys who raised a second bigger flag. It didn't get enough attention, as much attention as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe Rosenthal took a photo of it and became won a Pulitzer Prize, became one of the most famous photos of the Second World War.
Yeah, well, of American history, yeah. too.
Fifth day of the fighting, half of those guys end up getting killed at Iwo Jima. And, you know, and when it was over, I mean, our leaders were like thinking, you know, we lost that many people at Iwo Jima for that small land, and we lost 12,000 men killed at Okinawa. They were afraid what was going to happen in the Japanese islands, and that's part of the reason why we nuked those two cities.
Yeah. Well, my This Week in History, this episode comes out on the 14th. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. So I figured, why not a nice, little, lovely, romantic Valentine's Day massacre? So we're going to travel on up to Chicago for this. It's February 14th, 1929. At this point in time, five men dressed up like cops walk into a garage, and there are members of the Bugs Moran gang. There's five of them. One was like a mechanic. He wasn't a gangster. Mm-hmm. And another guy was just a guy who liked to say, hey, I know some gangsters and I hang out with them. I think he was like a dentist or something. Well, all seven of them got lined up against the wall, and these five individuals blew them away, destroyed. Well, that was a real turning point in the fight against the Italian mobsters, the mafia. So La Mafia, no, that's the, I think the,
I know the, the Moran had the north side, they were Irish, and the Capone had the south side. Those were the Italians. So, but see, that's
pretty vicious. And speaking of Capone,
a typical day in Chicago now, you know,
absolutely. You know. Yeah, what has changed? Except Prohibition's gone, right? Actually, Al Capone was the one who was blamed for that. So everybody thinks that, you know, you read up on it. It's like, yeah, Al Capone was the one.
He was down in Miami when it happened. Exactly. He had nothing to do
with
it.
He had nothing to do with it. He's a respectable businessman. Yeah. Hey, I'm a respectable businessman. I sell things. I do things.
He provides a service.
Exactly. You don't want the service? Maybe something happens to the place. I don't know. Is that pretty good?
You know, that movie, The Untouchables, I loved that.
Don't do that, man.
What?
That's my movie recommendation. So there were actually a number of suspects, Al Capone being one of them. Another one was actually Bugs Moran. I was like, well, maybe it was some type of setup. Another one was maybe.
But those
it was
were his own men that were shutting them down.
Yeah. And so, but he was thrown in the mix. Another was dirty cops. Maybe it was a bunch of dirty cops. But all the money was left there, right? Well, there's another one. There was a book about Capone called Get Capone. And this author comes up, you know, all this evidence is still there. And one of the things was this guy by the name of Fred Killer Burke. That's not his birth middle name. That's his nickname. Fred Killer Burke actually had killed a cop. They couldn't find him, but they found his vehicle, which had the weapons used in the massacre. Well, the cops finally ended up getting him, and he was killed.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah.
I heard
they never asked him about, hey, what happened? And never tried to tie him to the Valentine's Day massacre. So it very well could have been him, and it very well could have not been Al Capone.
I heard a story that they brought in a couple of guys from New York because they didn't want them to be recognized when they walked into the garage. It was a thought.
Yeah.
You know, that garage isn't there anymore.
But the thing is, like none of them drew their guns, right? So they're dressed up like cops. So apparently they didn't recognize them, or maybe they did recognize them. But if they did recognize them, why would they be dressed up like cops if they knew that they weren't cops? So maybe they definitely were cops, or they were just people that they didn't know who they were. And why are you going to do that on Valentine's Day? Happy Valentine's Day. Keep the change, you filthy animal. That was pretty good. All right, that's our This Week in History. All right, so we're going to get started. Alan, you have your notes ready?
I have my notes.
We're
going to
talk about the Battle of Saratoga. No, we're not. We're going to talk about the Saratoga Campaign, as you like to call it.
There is no Battle of Saratoga. I've told you that.
What is
it? How many times do I have to tell you that?
What is it then?
It's the Saratoga Campaign.
Okay.
Because it was a series of battles, and we're going to cover them all.
Hey.
or at least we're going to cover most of them, because there always is a chance I might have forgotten one. All but right, I
so
doubt
who,
it.
Who were the players of this battle or this campaign?
Wow, a lot of big players: John Burgoyne, Simon Fraser, or Fraser, one of his guys. Horatio Gates, Benedict Arnold, Arthur St. Clair, Philip Schuyler. A lot of folks. Daniel Morgan was in there. Henry Dearborn.
O.D. Morgan.
Benjamin Lincoln was there. So yeah, there were a lot of guys. But it was a very
Abraham.
Sir Guy Carleton. He was like the British governor in Canada. So
almost
near. All right. So this is what happened with the Saratoga campaign. Now, the year before, you know, we had the Battle of New York and all that. So William Howe was stationed in New York City, and Burgoyne was up in Quebec. And so here's what the plan was. The plan was that it was going to be a three-pronged attack. Burgoyne was going to come due south through the Hudson River Valley and Lake Champlain. A lieutenant colonel by the name of Barry St. Leger was going to land in Oswego and then drive east to Albany. Mm-hmm. And William Howe was supposed to go north from towards Albany. All three were supposed to meet in Albany.
Right.
And effectively, they would split New England from the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there were no bridges, nothing over the Hudson. So the British had the north, they would have the west, they had the seas, the Atlantic Ocean with the Royal Navy. So in effect, they would strangle New England. Mm-hmm. And then after they're done with New England, they can go after the rest of the country. So that was the plan. After, I think, the following year, they were going to drive east from Albany and go straight towards Boston. So, you know, that was the plan. But there was a slight kink in that William Howe really didn't care much for John Burgoyne. You know, those two plus Henry Clinton, they all came together to Boston,
at the beginning.
So William Howe really didn't care for Burgoyne, and he had other plans. Instead of going north, he put Henry Clinton, in charge of New York City, and he sailed to the Chesapeake and decided to attack and capture Philadelphia, which he did. And it led to a series of battles. But, you know, you had battles of Brandywine and Germantown and all that. But while that was going on, we had a huge campaign up in the north. Northern Department run by Philip Schuyler. And he put some troops in Ticonderoga. Didn't really with Crown Point. But Burgoyne sailed from St. John, and they captured Crown Point. He captured Crown Point on June 30th. Yeah, they left. They assembled at St. John's in Canada a couple weeks prior to that. So now he had with him. I have seen 7,000. I've seen 8,000. I've never gotten a full number, but I'm going to just say about 8,000 soldiers altogether. That included Canadian militia, loyalists, and the Iroquois Indians, the mm-hmm. Confederacy. So he captures Crown Point, and then he goes south, and then there's some skirmishes around July the 2nd. Now, granted, we are about to celebrate our country's one-year anniversary as an independent nation. So there were some skirmishes around Fort Ticonderoga, but they didn't really watch out for what we now know as Mount Defiance. Back then it was Sugarloaf. It's a mountain that overlooks Ticonderoga. They brought some cannon up there. And Arthur St. Clair saw the British on the mountain that overlooked Fort Ticonderoga. And he's like, okay, we quit. But he didn't surrender. He just fled. So on the night of the 5th of July was when they were up on the mountain. That night, they abandoned Fort Ticonderoga and Mount Independence, which was right across the way in Vermont. So they abandoned it on July the 6th. Burgoyne took Fort Ticonderoga and Mount Independence, and then proceeded to chase the fleeing Americans. They met around a town called Hubbardton, which was in Vermont. Now, the British won that one, but the Americans fought long enough to slow the British down. So now, this Battle of Hubbardton was the only battle that was ever fought in Vermont. But you didn't know that one, did you?
New
You know, like the Battle of Bennington? Wasn't even the Benningtons in Vermont wasn't fought in Vermont. So
can you believe that?
I know.
The deception.
So you had the Battle of Hubbardton, which again delaying action, but the British still took the field. And then they kept driving through. There was a town called Skeensborough, named after a loyalist named Skeen. And then there was the Battle of Fort Anne, which really wasn't much of a battle, but there was one British officer that was screaming like Indians, war whoops, and it scared the Americans, and so they fled. So
one guy screaming?
One officer was screaming. He needed reinforcements. He was kind of, you know, needed help. So he was surrounded by U.S. soldiers, American soldiers and militia, and so he decided to pretend like he was an Indian, did the war whoops. It scared them, and they took off. So they captured Fort Anne and kept going towards...
Oh, they just shot into the noise.
Huh? I don't know. That was the frontier. People were scared. Didn't you ever read The Last of the Mohicans?
I didn't read it, but I did watch it.
Okay. Well, you know that that famous fort that was captured, the mm-hmm. William Henry. Okay, well, that's in Fort George, which is like on the very southern end of Lake George. Or not Fort George. I'm sorry. Lake George. It's on the very southern end of that lake. Yeah. That town was captured. Fort Edward, which was just south of there, that was captured. Now, Schuyler, what he did was he had his men cut down trees, as many trees as they could, to slow down the British soldiers.
Tell you what, if the EPA was around,
you know, the tree huggers,
we wouldn't have a country.
No, we would not. It was it did slow, but those poor innocent trees all cut down,
murdered.
Yeah. So, and they were destroying bridges. They were like just doing all kinds of things. Scorched earth policy. That's what Schuyler ordered, a scorched earth policy. Now, Schuyler and St. Clair both got court-martialed because Fort Ticonderoga fell. Now Arthur St. Clair, he did call out the militia. He kept yelling, "Please, we need the militia. We need help." And
was anybody held accountable for the loss of lives of trees? See, that's, you know, what
that's,
irritates
yeah,
me.
That, yeah, that, and I that know does it hurts peeve you me too. To this day.
Yeah.
To this day, it kind of peeves me, the whole thought process. But, St. Clair and Schuyler were both court-martialed, relieved of duty. And we'll talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Horatio Gates took over Schuyler's. Schuyler was head of the Northern Department, but Horatio Gates took over for him. So now, like I said, St. Clair did call out the militia all over, and they did turn out quite a bit, which had a huge factor later on. So now there was also this young lady named Jane McCrae, who was dating one of Burgoyne's loyalist soldiers. And she was going to go and try to be with him. But now the Indians, many of the Iroquois, you had the Huron, the Algonquin, they were all coming in and aiding Burgoyne, and they were going on a rampage. Well, they came across Jane McCrae and killed her. Just,
wham,
they scalped her. And then they showed the scalp to to Burgoyne. And that guy that was dating Jane McCrae, he was right there, and he recognized his girlfriend's scalp.
And he recognized the scalp?
Wow. Yep. So, Burgoyne really didn't do anything to the butt. That was a huge propaganda for the Americans. Now at the same time, let's go west. Oswego. So Oswego, Barry St. Leger lands in Oswego with about 1,000. Most of were, you know, there were a lot of Canadians, some Indians. Now he had Mohawk chief named Joseph Brant, very famous Mohawk chief. He also had a guy, I think his name was John Butler. I think that he had Butler's Rangers. Now, these guys were tough loyalists. They're called Butler's Rangers. Hmm. They were loyalists. They really didn't care much for the Patriots, because they lost a lot of their lands and all that. So they landed in Oswego, and then they marched east to a town. Today, there's a city called Rome, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right smack in the middle of Rome, you can go there right now. There's a Fort Stanwix. Now, back then, it was called Fort Schuyler, named after, General mm-hmm. Schuyler. So that was around August the 2nd. They showed up, and they besieged Fort Schuyler. Now, the militias heard about it, and there was one guy Let's see. His name was Herkimer. You know, this is the part. Here we go. Herkimer. Nicholas Herkimer. He had about 800 members of the Tryon County Militia. And he had some Indians with him. The Oneida, I think, is what they're called. Oneida.
Okay.
They're part of the Federation of the Six Nations. Okay. So they marched west to help out the men that were trapped in Fort Schuyler. And then they were attacked in a town called Oriskany. So that's where you had the Battle of Oriskany. And that was on the 6th of August. They were attacked by Tories, some Canadians, British soldiers, and Joseph Brandt and that Butler guy. Yeah. And if I can ever get his correct name, but I just know his name was Butler. I think it was John Butler. So, anywho, John Butler. So I got the notes
there
right
there. There you go. Not All Jimmy right. Butler from the Chicago Bulls. No, different guy.
Okay, so Very they attacked different. They attacked the Americans, Herkimer. Mm-hmm. Now, Herkimer was mortally wounded, and he propped up against a tree, and he was still directing his men to fight. And, you know, they kept coming. They kept coming. Butler's men tried to turn their coats around to pretend like they were patriots. But, you know, this was a civil war. Some of the guys were like, that's my brother. That's Butler's, you know. And so the fighting resumed. And they were able to hold them off, and they went back to the besieging Fort Schuyler. Now, Schuyler, General Schuyler, he was still in command at this point. He sends Benedict Arnold to go relieve the guys at Fort Schuyler. So Benedict Arnold goes west, and he gets some recruits. He has about 1,000 men himself. Now, they captured this loyalist, and he told the loyalist, this is what you're going to tell him. You're going to tell him that Benedict Arnold is bringing a huge... Now, Arnold, by the way, had a big reputation. He had a great reputation for himself at this point. But he said, tell them that I'm coming in with like thousands and thousands of soldiers.
Yeah.
So he goes back and he tells Barry St. Leger, yeah, he's got thousands of soldiers and they're on the way right now.
Yeah.
So Joseph Brandt's like, okay, we're out of here. So St. Leger loses all his men, all his Indians.
Yeah.
So St. Leger is like, okay, this is obvious failure. Let's get out of here.
Right.
Now, he also thought that Burgoyne had been defeated. That was also part of the ruse. So St. Leger just takes off and he leaves. Now, Arnold gets to the fort, sends some of his men to chase them, but then the majority of the men, they're able to relieve the men, obviously, so they were rescued. So then he now turns around and goes back because he knows that Burgoyne is heading south, and they were going to meet at Saratoga. When he gets to Albany, he finds out that Horatio Gates is now his new boss. So he goes up. Now, what is Saratoga?
It's the beginning of the end.
Yeah. Well, you know, at this time, Gates and
or is it the end of the beginning?
I don't know. Somebody said that.
Winston Churchill.
Was it Winston Churchill? Okay, so
different war.
Yeah. So he goes up. Now, Burgoyne is still marching south. He doesn't know really that Howe abandoned the whole thing.
Hmm.
I've heard different dates as to when he did find out.
Yeah.
But he certainly didn't know about St. Leger. So he's now marching south. He crosses the Hudson, and he's now on the west bank of the Hudson. And as he's coming south towards Albany, there's a hill, the Bemis Heights area. It's a pretty hilly
Bemis
area.
Or Bemis?
Bemis. Bemis Heights. Man, I keep
saying that. You were the one who wanted to get that right. Bemis.
Bemis Heights. Okay. Now, Bemis Heights is north of Albany, and it's just south of Saratoga. So now, there was this Polish engineer, Thaddeus Kosciuszko. God, you know, why can't he have something like Smith, you know?
Yeah, Smith.
So his name was, he was a famous engineer. Thaddeus Kosciuszko. So he designed the defense around Bemis Heights.
Bemis.
So now they've got, to the east of them, they have the river. The Hudson River, also known as the North River. And then they're up on the hill. And then to their left was really, really thick forested areas, which doesn't work well for British soldiers because the British Army, they like to march in formation.
Exactly.
The forest.
They don't do the guerrilla stuff.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, our guys were more into the forest. So now this is where General George Washington sent like Daniel Morgan and Henry Dearborn up there, sharpshooters, light infantry to aid Horatio Gates. And so here comes Burgoyne. And as he's marching and he's moving forward, you know, they attack, the British attack. But now he sent a guy, that's Simon Fraser guy, one of Burgoyne's men, on to his right flank, which would have been like to the American left flank. Yeah. The British are known for flanking. They were pretty good at that. Now, Arnold figured that they were going to do that. So he, the main body did hit, you know, Burgoyne's main body did hit the main American part, but there was that one flank where the British went, and Benedict Arnold, you know, sent his men to meet that flank because he knew that that was going to happen. And yeah, sure enough,
it's sort of like how Hans knew that the FBI were going to go exactly by the FBI playbook.
Yep. And the two Johnsons didn't see that coming.
No relation.
No relation. So. So, yeah, so it was, so that battle was, I think it was September the 9th, you know, September the 19th, Battle of Freeman's Farm. That was the first battle of Saratoga, because, you know, there were two major ones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did want to mention, we'll mention the battles of Freeman's Farm, but I do want to discuss one little battle, which this is going to kind of make sense as to what was going on. So you had the Battle of Freeman's Farm, and the British lost a lot of guys. Now they held the land, but they lost a lot of guys in the process. And he decides Burgoyne was going to attack the next day, but he realized that wouldn't be a good idea because his men were too wary. So he decides to dig in and wait for Leger. And now, by this time, he knew that Henry Clinton, was going to come up there. Henry Clinton, he found out that William Howe sailed off to Philadelphia, which he captured. And so Henry Clinton was going to bring up some men to help relieve and help out Burgoyne. So he's like, okay, I'm going to dig in. Now, what's important is this, is that, and, you know, because I forgot to mention this one part in one major battle, and I don't know why I missed this one. This is what happens when you don't look at your notes too much.
Oh, you got to look at your notes.
I got to look at the notes. The Battle of Bennington. How could I have missed the Battle of Bennington?
I don't know. Why would you miss that?
Well, I shouldn't have. You know why? It's because in my notes I didn't put it as a highlighted thing.
Well, there you go.
That was my fault. But, you know,
this is your first time to put notes together.
Well, you know, this is my...
And this is your first time on the show.
It's not my first time on the show. It's the first time I've produced a show in quite some time. But, you know, it's my friend's fault last time.
Which friend?
Well, my girlfriend. And
you meant.
And a friend. And our friend.
In China.
Our friend named Beth. So my girlfriend Laura wanted me to be at her place like at such and such time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Move on, because I'm tired of you coming up with excuses with every little thing.
So I had to be somewhere, and so I was like rushing to... Okay, the Battle of Bennington. All right, now... They were running low on supplies. This is back when Burgoyne was still at like
Fort
Edward.
When was this? In June, July?
This was in July. Okay, so July 29.
Okay.
Burgoyne captures Fort Edward, which was kind of like a big deal in that area. Now on August the 3rd. Okay, so August the 3rd is when he received the news that William Howe wasn't coming. So he's like, eek, that kind of sucks. He didn't know about St. Leger, but he knew that Howe wasn't going to be coming. So he sent a couple of Germans to go, he knew of an armory in Bennington, Vermont. Now, you remember how I said that St. Clair, Arthur St. Clair, called out the militia? Well, a guy named John Starks answered the call, and he had his New Hampshire, he had like a, you know, New Hampshire soldiers and militia waiting in Bennington, Vermont, which is where this big armory was.
John Starks, was he from New York?
No, I thought he was from New Hampshire.
He didn't play for the Knicks?
No, well, this is before, you idiot. See, I can call you an idiot now. He actually fought at the Battle of Bunker Hill, which really was on Breed's Hill.
He also fought the Bulls and the Rockets. Yes, lost both times.
Yeah, you know, they think that he was the one who said, don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes.
John Starks.
John Starks, yeah. So he was in Bennington.
He's a good man.
So Burgoyne sends, let's see, Lieutenant Colonel Friedrich Baum. From my understanding, he couldn't even speak English. He was a German.
Man.
No. So
that's rough.
Yeah, he sends about 700 troops, and
can you imagine him just taking off after speaking for like 10 minutes, and then, you know, you're in charge, and then when he leaves, you look to your guy you're supposed to be helping, and you're like, what the hell did he just say?
Yeah, I know. Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
But I tell you what, here's what sucks for Burgoyne.
What's that?
It seems to me, walking into a trap set by his own men. That sucks. Like, you're more or less, you're betrayed by your own men.
Yeah, that's kind of, it's like you're depending on someone to help you out. And
then they don't.
They don't show. I mean, you know, if Howe had done that, they could.
It could have been a very different outcome.
Yeah, yeah.
But what is it? Jealousy or just disregard for each other? Yeah, if you don't work together, man.
Well, you know, simultaneously, while all this is going on, Howe is fighting Washington at Brandywine, Germantown, Paoli. So, yeah, that was a lot going on in both ends. So, okay, so Baum, just before he could get to Bennington, he's still in New York when Starks attacks him. Now, I've actually been at that field. It's like a hilltop. So Baum was up on the hilltop, and Starks and his men surrounded them, totally annihilated them, totally annihilated them. So as they're doing up the, and Baum was killed, just about everybody was killed or captured. So
his final words?
9-9-9.
Nobody understood.
Yeah, probably. Actually, yeah. You know who else speaks German was Hans Gruber. But see, Hans Gruber spoke English.
Hans Gruber,
yeah. All right, anyway. Okay, so now mopping up, they're cleaning up the mess that was created at the Battle of Bennington, which was on the 16th of August. And that's where that big famous Bennington flag, you've seen that one. Even though it wasn't fought in
New York.
So we
got through Bennington.
Okay, well, hold on. It's not over.
We're not over yet?
No.
They're mopping up.
Because now there was a second group of Germans under Lieutenant Colonel Heinrich von Bremen. He shows up with about 550 to 650 of his own men. But right when that happens, Seth Warner of the Green Mountain Boys from Vermont shows up to aid John Starks.
Green Mountain Boys, they belong to Daniel Morgan, right?
Or is no, that someone Daniel else? Morgan, Daniel Morgan, Morgan's riflemen. They're who, from. Who, he had like Pennsylvania.
Who was the leader of the Green Mountain Boys?
That was Ethan Allen.
Ethan Allen.
Yeah,
I knew it was a famous name.
Yeah, but then Ethan.
I knew it was a guy who put furniture together.
Yes. I thought you were going to say something about Green Mountain Energy.
I used to have them.
I did too, but they were too expensive.
They started off well.
Yeah, they did.
And then all of a sudden, I was like, yeah, can't afford you.
Well, yeah, Ethan Allen was captured, and I don't know when he was released, but he wasn't in charge at this point. So Seth Warner, not of Warner Cable, but Seth Warner was in charge of the Green Mountain Boys, so they showed up.
But he was one of the Warner Brothers, right? Oh, see, my jokes are, they're better. Keep going.
You know, the time I spend is like life. Get it? Okay, so... So Bremen's got his ass kicked by Warner and Starks. So Bremen goes back and tells Burgoyne, dude, you know, game over, man, game over. We lost. And they didn't have any supplies. Now, Bremen did survive, unlike Baum. But, yeah, they didn't have any of the supplies that Burgoyne badly needed. So now fast forward to...
Freeman's Farm.
Okay, so Battle of Freeman's Farm takes place, and... Burgoyne decides, okay, we're going to dig in. They were even planting crops. Did you know that?
Wow.
They were planting. They were like, we're going to be here for a while.
We're going to stay here for a while.
Yes. So.
Like, we're going to stay here for a while. This is not, hey, run to the grocery store. This is, hey, start planting some seeds because we're going to be here for another year.
Yeah. That's what they were thinking. They think they're going to stay there for the winter. You know, so Leger will show up and everything will be honky-dory. And then, you know, if Clinton shows up, then we can still salvage this attack and...
Right.
And
because in the winter, everybody stops fighting back in those days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So except for George Washington.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, on Christmas Day, we will slit your throats.
Yep. Now, when all this was going on, word got back to England about the capture of Ticonderoga, and King George III, I'm like going, wait, how many Georges were there? We had a sixth. That's Elizabeth's father. George III was like going, we won. He thought... Because they captured Ticonderoga, that they had, won, and now the French, like the Count, what is it, the Comte Vergennes,
Vergennes,
yeah, he's like the foreign minister. He was bummed The British were like telling Britain.
He was a big fan of America. Yeah.
Yeah, and he hated the British.
And he was very close to.
He and Washington became very close.
Marquis de Lafayette.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, well, Lafayette showed up. He was, but he was with Washington at that time. But, so that was. But the British, the French, and the weren't too happy about it. So Britain put pressure on France and Spain to keep American shipping from going to their ports, and France and Spain are, you know, giving them the finger. Although I don't know if the French give the finger, like, you know, I know the British, they have a.
I don't know. Let's not do it.
Okay, I don't want to offend anyone.
Yeah, well, you will offend me.
Okay. Yeah, are any Canadians watching this show?
Yeah. I don't know. They're busy right now.
I know. Okay. Yeah. So now, Benedict Arnold and Horatio Gates, they start clashing at this point. They used to be friends. Now they're getting on each other's nerves. Because Arnold was like, attack, attack. And Horatio Gates was more defense-minded, you know. So it, you know, caused problems between the two of them. So now fast forward, and we are going to move to the next battle, called the Battle of Bemis Heights, which is October the 7th.
2 days before my birthday.
Is it 2 days? You know, you need to really let me know when your birthday is, because...
Why does it matter? You're not going to give me anything.
Well, I didn't do anything that fall. I had a rough time. I had my mom.
I hope that cut you pretty deep.
Well, you know...
I don't know when your birthday is, so...
I don't want to tell it, you know.
They're not going to get you anything either.
You know, some of my friends do watch this. Although after this episode, probably not. All right.
Bemis Heights.
The Battle of Bemis Heights. All right. So now, you know, Benedict Arnold was like sick and tired of Horatio Gates' weakness. You know, like, Arnold was like, attack!
Yeah.
Gates was like, nope, let them come to us, type of thing.
Yeah.
So now, October the 7th, the attack begins. Thanks. Mm-hmm. The attack begins again. It was like Freeman's Farm, just really, really bloody and you know, hot, and a lot of stuff, a lot of shooting, a lot of artillery duels and this and that. But our guys, the Americans, were starting to win.
Mm-hmm.
And then Benedict Arnold, him and Daniel Morgan and their men, they kind of went to their left, which was the British right, and outflanked them there were these two redoubts where they had artillery. One of them was named after Bremen, Heinrich Bremen, and the other redoubt, and you go there, and they rebuilt the redoubts. And the other redoubt was named after a lord, and I can't pronounce his name. It's like Barkal something or other. Balcaris. They named the redoubts after them, Lord Balcaris. Anyway, this is where Benedict Arnold got severely injured.
In the leg?
In the leg, yeah. Horse fell on him.
Yeesh.
Broke his leg. Now, he hurt his leg like the previous New Year's, or I think it was previous New Year's, whenever it was when they were attacking Quebec, and he messed up his leg. Well, now he messed up his leg again.
Yeah.
So, it was like a year and a half.
He got shot first, and then this was the horse?
I think he got shot. Yeah, he got shot.
In Quebec?
It was Quebec. It was New Year's Eve of from 75, ending of 75, and beginning of 76.
Yeah.
So it was New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. It was in the middle of a blizzard. So so now his leg gets re-injured, okay? And but they kind of like swung behind the redoubt, and they were able to capture the two redoubts. And when they did that, that was their right flank, the British right flank.
Yeah.
So that was it. The British they took off running. They fled and went all the way back to the Hudson. That Simon Fraser guy, he was hit.
Yeah.
And they buried him. I went to the area where it overlooks, really, really pretty area, overlooks the Hudson River. Mm. So that was the Battle of Bemis Heights. It was a resounding American victory. The Burgoyne fled, and they moved up north. They traveled like 8 miles north to present-day Schuylerville, named after Schuyler. Schuyler had a house there. Burgoyne burned it down. So he
nice guy.
I know. So now, remember how I said about St. Clair, how we called out the militia? Okay, so thousands of militia surrounded Burgoyne and his men in present-day Schuylerville. And they were under siege, and they were bombarding them and shelling them. There's later on, I'll mention a book. I think it was Heinrich's wife or someone else, Riedel something. You know, I can't pronounce their name.
It's okay.
It's, but I have the book over there. But right. We'll mention it. She wrote a, and I was actually, I went to the house where she was at, which was right near the river. But that house was shelled, and that was kind of an aid station. And she wrote a memoir about the whole thing. It's pretty interesting. Her husband becomes a POW. Anyway, so now let's look at Henry Clinton. Now, Henry Clinton promised that he was going to show up. Now, he got delayed. He was supposed to leave, I think it was on August 21st, but he got severely delayed. So he finally does take off. He takes about 3,000 men with him, and they go up the Hudson River. There are two forts called Fort Clinton and Fort Montgomery. Mm-hmm. Now, both of them were run by Clinton.
Wasn't Henry Clinton, like, he was delayed, he was over at Fort Lewinsky, right?
You know, you're leaving Come a bad taste that. In my mouth right now. Really?
You know, look at you.
Should I have said that?
You came back.
You know, I stained.
Oh, come on.
That coffee.
Yeah, let's go.
Coffee stained my my shirt. Yeah. Anyway.
Don't go nuts.
You know, I hope this is. Is this a family show? Is it,
well, once we get deeper into the show, okay. It no longer becomes a family show.
All right. Well, all right. So you had two Clintons that were running the Fort Montgomery and the Fort Clinton. Now, this is in the Hudson. This is right on the Hudson. We'll show the map and all that. Yeah. But Henry Clinton, so they called it like the Battle of the Clintons because there were so many Clintons involved. Mm-hmm. So Henry Clinton takes 3,000 soldiers, loyalists, and they capture the two forts. But that was about it. That's about as far as they really went.
Yeah.
Isaac, what's that guy's name? Oh, God, I forgot his name. Isaac something or other. He was in the...
Isaac Newton?
No.
Isaac Bruce?
Israel Putnam, not Isaac. Israel Putnam.
Isaac Putnam?
Israel Putnam was there.
Okay.
And he kind of fled. He really should have stepped up to the plate, but he didn't. But he's getting old. He's like 59 or something.
He's an old man.
He is, you know. So Israel Putnam was in the vicinity, Catskills or something, but he didn't really help out like he should have. Anywho, but so those 3,000 men, it was kind of too little too late. Mm-hmm. And so finally, you know, they were being shelled. Burgoyne kept stalling, Council of War. Burgoyne kept hoping that Sir Henry Clinton would show up. They never did.
Yeah.
So on October the 17th, he finally surrenders. Mm-hmm. He surrenders an entire army. This was like the first time the British had ever done that.
Yeah.
7,000, 8,000 men, just, that's it,
yeah.
Gone. And the only men that he had left were those that were at Ticonderoga and Crown.
Yeah, the range of emotions that King George III was feeling from we won to, oh, good grief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was, but you know, there were repercussions for all this. Now, Horatio Gates took all the credit, all the credit. He left Benedict Arnold out. Now, Benedict Arnold, he was crippled at this point. His leg was just messed up.
Yeah.
Now, that would have a bad effect, and we'll talk about that, about the reverberations. The British did withdraw from Ticonderoga and Crown Point by November. Burgoyne himself was released on parole May of 1778 for about 1,000 captured Americans. So, Northern Department, man, they kicked ass, and George Washington. Now, here's the thing, the repercussions.
Can you imagine if we got something like that? Like, we need to do that.
What's that?
Americans, like, whenever we got to trade somebody, like, all right, we'll give you one terrorist for 100 of our spies.
Well, you know, we had that, was it that Obama's got that one guy released, the one who deserted?
Who deserted.
One deserter for five or six high-level...
Yeah,
Taliban
it's
terrorists.
It's this, but in reverse.
Yeah. I don't remember that guy's name, but he really isn't worth remembering.
It's forgettable. It's forgettable.
And, you know, normally I'd be like, okay, I'm not going to criticize the dude, but, you know, it was his fellow soldiers that called him a traitor.
Exactly.
A deserter and a traitor. So, you know, if they're going to call him that, okay, you know. But, yeah, we came, five or six Taliban, high-level Taliban, who, by the way, participated in the war last year where they captured
Kabul. It's a joke. Kabul. It's a scam.
All right. Now, let's talk about the repercussions of the great Saratoga victory. All right?
Let's do it.
What? Okay. A lot of things happened. France. France was like, hey, the British just got their asses kicked at Saratoga. I mean, we're talking an entire army surrendered. That just does not happen. Mm-mm. So the French were now like, you know what? I think maybe, you know, they saw that the Americans don't quit. Because even though Philadelphia, which was the capital, had been captured, we still didn't quit.
Right.
Washington attacked afterwards at Germantown. Now, granted, it was a very complicated attack. But had everybody did what they were supposed to, we would have won at Germantown.
Yeah. We still did pretty well, but we didn't win. Yeah.
But the French were just amazed at how the Americans just weren't going to quit.
Yep.
And, you know, Washington went back to, he settled in Valley Forge. A lot of Europeans were like, we want to help these Americans out. This is where Baron von Steuben shows up. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy that did the drills, turned the American army into a disciplined. Now, the French signed two treaties with the United States. One of them was like a treaty of friendship. And the second one was the treaty, like a military treaty. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, we didn't really have a navy. We had a few ships, but we sure as hell didn't have a navy like the British Royal Navy. So now we had France's navy, which
huge outstanding,
huge, yes. And it compelled Spain to join the following year, and they had a huge navy themselves. They had like 100,000 soldiers. You put all their territories together, which had a big effect on with the Gulf Coast campaign. So with France and Spain joining the war, then the Netherlands joined. You know, the British, now here's what happened was is that the British controlled Philadelphia. That's where William Howe was. Now, William Howe was like, he was bummed about everything that went on. And so he quit the war. Henry Clinton was now the commander-in-chief. The British were like going, crap, if the French are going to join us, let's send this guy named the Earl of Carlisle. It was a Carlisle Peace Commission to try to see, can we get the Americans? We'll give Americans everything except independence. The Peace Commission failed. Clinton decides, because France is now at war with us, this is a world war, he decides to withdraw from Philadelphia, go back to New York, consolidate his men, because he had to send like 3,000 men out of North America to go fight elsewhere. This is now a world war. So, you know, Battle of Monmouth, which really put an end to the that cabal, the Conway cabal. Washington appoints Benedict Arnold to be the military governor of Philadelphia. He meets a girl named Peggy Shippen. He's being harassed by Joseph Reed and his and the rest of his minions. So, you know, Benedict Arnold is being sued. He's being, you know, court-martialed. He's this, you know, they're like saying all these things about him. Well, you know, Washington had to placate Pennsylvania because Pennsylvania was going to quit the war. And so Arnold was like, you know, listening. And, you know, and Stephen Brumwell will get more into this. But, you know, Arnold was like, you know, who's this, hey, Peggy, who's this John Andre guy, this major from the British military intelligence, friend of yours? Will he pay me, you know, because I really don't want to fight for these guys anymore. So there were a lot of repercussions from the whole thing. Now, Schuyler and St. Clair were both court-martialed, but they were not, they were exonerated. But by that time, they really lost. They didn't, really didn't run anything after that. So, yeah, that was the battle, the whole Saratoga campaign. I don't want to say it was a turning point. Oh, I did want to mention Horatio Gates. He did pretend like he was the genius, the hero, the hero of the hour. Benjamin Lincoln, I mentioned him. Now, he surrenders at it was called Charlestown at the time, surrenders with about the same number of men that Burgoyne surrendered. So it was the biggest American defeat of the war. So they sent Horatio Gates to be head of the Southern Department. He gets his ass handed to him at Camden.
Yep.
Nathanael Greene takes over. Nathanael Greene wins the war in the South. So trying to think, is there anything? Did we miss anything? I think we caught everything. That was about it. Yes. Yes. So now.
Now you know everything now you need to know about the Saratoga campaign.
I, and I'm going to say this. I'm a fan of Benedict Arnold.
I'm not. He's a betrayer.
You know what? Yeah, he was a traitor. He was a traitor. But you know what? He was screwed. He was screwed by a lot of guys, Joseph Reed and this guy named John Brown and several, you know, Gates. And unfortunately, he had his own Yoko Ono that was like, you know, you could start your own band.
Yeah. And boy, she sing.
Yeah, Yoko. I love her in Revolution Number 9. She does the...
She's fantastic.
Yeah, beautiful girl.
She's a...
nicest butt I've ever seen on a woman.
She's an American icon.
Yeah, so I'm going to say the Saratoga campaign was mostly won because of Benedict Arnold, and that was the turning point. It brought the French, and it eventually brought the Spaniards, mm-hmm. and it was a huge, again, it wasn't a turning point like Stalingrad or El Alamein, you know, where all of a sudden now we're winning every battle. It wasn't like that, but it was more of like, if you know the Peloponnesian War, it was kind of like the surrender at Syracuse. It didn't turn things around completely, but it was the beginning of the end, or the end of the beginning. Yes.
All right. Well, yeah. Fantastic. I'm looking forward to the conversation because I got a lot of questions to ask Stephen Brumwell.
Yeah.
In regards to Dr. Arnold. So. Yeah. All right, man. So. Well done.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. I enjoyed this one.
I
know.
Yeah. I know. You did all the talking.
See, this is why if you're going to invite someone from China, make sure they're Taiwanese, not a PRC. The People's Republic.
No, I got you. Yeah. All right. Well, that brings our show to an end, except for our book and movie recommendations. All right. So my book recommendation is a book on the subject of Benedict Arnold. It's actually Nathaniel Philbrick's book, Valiant Ambition. It's the story of George Washington, Benedict Arnold, and the fate of the American Revolution. If you've never read any Nathaniel Philbrick, he's quite a good historian. I really enjoy his work. Yeah. I read his In the Heart of the Sea, which is quite good.
Is that the one about the whale? Or
about the whale.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Sort of the inspiration of Moby Dick.
I think Essex was
good. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. My movie recommendation, The Untouchables, Kevin Costner, Andy Garcia, Bobby De Niro, and the late, great Sean Connery, sadly also dies in the movie. Spoiler alert.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Did he squeal like this? So, yeah, if you've never seen The Untouchables, that's a must.
Yeah,
that is a must. So, all right, that's it.
For me, the movie, or not really a movie, but if you can get this, it's not new, but you can find them someplace, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. The History Channel's Classics on the Revolution. It covers everything from all the taxes that took place right after the Seven Years' War up until Yorktown and what happened after Yorktown. So definitely worth getting if you want to know a comprehensive story about the American Revolutionary War. So that is... Normally, I would say, you know, Turncoat by Stephen Brumwell, but he's going to be our guest in a couple of weeks. So I think, was it the 28th?
It will be the 20th. Yeah, it will be the 28th.
28th.
He'll join us on that Saturday.
Right.
But yeah.
But I'll save that one for then. But there's a lot of books. I'm going to call this further reading, required reading, or whatever, for the Saratoga. Baroness von Riedessel. This is a memoir of... she was the wife of one of the Germans who was captured. Talks about, like, you know, the artillery that mm-hmm. hit them in the house up in Schuylerville. So that is one of them. Great memoir. Revolution on the Hudson by George... Oh, Dauphin?
Dugan.
Dugan, Dauphin? I don't know.
Daugan.
Revolution on the Hudson. This is all required reading, so, you know, further reading. Those Turbulent Sons of Freedom. Now, this is about the Green Mountain Boys, Ethan Allen, by Christopher Wren. See, that one's easy to... Turbulent Sons. Wren. Because the... Oh, you know that Vermont was a country at that time?
Hello, Wren.
You know that Vermont... Remember that? Vermont was an independent nation.
The Vermont Republic?
Yeah, the Vermont Republic.
Wren and Stimpy? Go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know... So, you know, Vermont, the nation of Vermont, and you had the Oneida Indians helping the Americans. I know. Okay. Bloody Mohawk. These are two movies. Two books about the Mohawk Valley. You have Rebellion in the Mohawk Valley, and you have Bloody Mohawk. These come in highly recommended. When I was at Oriskany, the battlefield, they said, get these books. So get these books by Richard Burleth and Gavin Watt. Get these books.
Didn't you have a mohawk back in the day when you worked at the Stevens and Pruitt show?
I didn't have a mohawk.
Where's your microphone? I used Sunning. How do you think you're being heard?
Did that happen just now?
I think it did.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So, I put Sunning in my hair.
Great.
You know, I had orange hair.
It was just really just visuals.
Okay. Battle of Hubbardton. The only battle. I actually bought this at Hubbardton Battlefield.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
So this is the only battle in Vermont. Now, I couldn't find this, but there is a book called The Battle of Oriskany by Ellis Roberts. This is one of those print-on-demand type of...
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, The Battle of Oriskany, if you want that one. A book called Proud Patriot. It's by... It's about Philip Schuyler by Don Gerlach.
Don't ask me.
I don't know. I just, you know, this is... Okay, now, if you want a comprehensive book on the Saratoga campaign, Richard Ketchum, Saratoga, The Turning Point of America's Revolutionary War.
Okay. There you go. All right, fantastic.
That's further reading for all of you. Read them and be the expert of one of the greatest battles and campaigns in the American Revolutionary War.
Are you quite done?
I'm done.
All right. Well, that brings our show to an end. Next week, we will have Batya Ungersargon. She is the deputy opinion editor for Newsweek. She has written a new book called Bad News, How Woke Media is Undermining Democracy. I'm looking forward to that conversation.
She's with News Woke. Is that what you said?
Oh. Aren't you part of the problem? Okay. So that is it. Go check us out on social media and our website, thesonsofhistory.com. I would let you do it, but we're out of time.
Oh, okay.
All right. See you later, everyone. See you next week.